So I'm in Forestville with Sarah Harris, who's the co-founder of Earthways Limited Liability Corporation, and also guides for them, and has been on the board of the School of Lost Borders in the east side of the Sierras, and also is a guest guide in their program for elder women. Sarah is a retired therapist. Welcome, Sarah.
Thank you.
And Cynthia Morrow, who's been a guide for Earthways for 10 years and also guides for the School of Lost Borders in their Women's Vision Fest program. She is a therapist and does biodynamic cranial sacral work. Welcome, Cynthia.
Thank you, Patrick. Good to be here.
All right. So let's start by talking a little bit about Earthways, and either of you can, chime in as you want. Just to let people know what you're doing. What is Earthways? What's your passion?
Well, I'll go first. I guess my passion is that I can't kind of separate my passion from what first got me into it. So when I was turning 50, I went to a meeting about a possible vision quest, and I came out of the meeting going, "Why would I pay money to go out in the wilderness with a group of people? That sounded terrible to me." I had experience backpacking and camping, and I'd done some of that even alone. And it's like, I can do that. I can go out and have a vision quest by myself. And then bit by bit, I decided I would go. And when I went, it was so different and so life-altering for me that my passion became what I saw happen in myself and others. It took me a year or so to admit I really wanted to do that work, to become a guide. But I just fell in love with the path. With the way of taking people out into the wilderness in this particular way. I had taken a group once before backpacking, and I thought I might be doing that, and I had been disappointed because it was just a fun trip. And what I realized once I got to my training program and my own guide work is what was missing was that sense of ceremony and the sacred.
And out of that came Earthways
And
then?
out of that came Earthways. There was another woman, Susan Kisten in Sebastopol, who was on that same vision fast, also celebrating her 50th birthday. So we met there and began talking about how we could begin to bring these ways back home and began doing more training and experimenting and starting programs until it grew. And now Earthways has 10 guides.
And you both met at School of Lost Borders then, doing
No,
a
we
vision
went
quest?
through Ann Stein, Wilderness Rites. She had trained with Lost Borders, and she was an older woman at the time, became one of our mentors and friends, and so it was on her fast that we met. And then we went to School of Lost Borders for training.
And out of that chemistry between the two of you, between you and Susan Kisten, came this vision to have a corporation.
Well, that didn't happen until just a couple of years ago. But it became a vision to have a way to get people out on the land in ways we were experiencing. And also, part of our vision was to gather more guides who could do this work and become kind of a group. Because once everybody's trained at Lost Borders, everybody wishes they could work at Lost Borders, and that just can't happen. And it needs to come into communities. So we just wanted to do it right here in our own community with with people.
And I guess probably, Cynthia, that's how you got involved, right? Is
Yeah,
someone.
and actually, I met Sarah and Susan together at a training at School of Lost Borders in 2004. It was for mirroring training, which was about 3 months after my first Vision Fast with School of Lost Borders. And I think it was maybe a year later that I joined Earthways. But I had a similar experience as what Sarah described, a lot of background with backpacking and camping. And I grew up doing a lot of land exploration in my family in the Eastern Sierra. So the place where School of Lost Borders is was like home base for me. And I'd had a lot of my own solo experiences also in the wilderness, long-term, high, deep immersions in the sacred also. But what was completely new for me with experiencing the ceremony in this way was the experience of the circle of the people, the deep witnessing that happens amongst each of us, which completely blew me open in a big way to have what I used to have in going out for these excursions. I would have these very rich, profound experiences in wilderness, and then I would come home and have nobody really who could get what I had gone through. And so I would feel this separation from my people, from my community, from my work. And the thing that really brought it home for me when I discovered this ceremony in this way through Lost Borders, which is really what we do our base our work on in Earthways, is that experience of deep witnessing of each other's experience, their story out there on the land. And it really opens it up. It makes it possible for us to bring it and integrate it into our world and into our lives.
So yeah, so that so maybe describing for people who may not even know the process of vision fasting and so forth, if someone were to go to your website and then and they're going to be involved in this, what would happen with somebody who's attracted to this? They don't know what they're getting into. So, you know,
that's always true.
What are they getting into?
Well, if someone's really drawn to do a vision quest, or we call it a vision fast, but the other word is often more commonly used, someone is usually in a life change of some sort, either leaving something or starting something, or they may be confused or lost, and they just feel that call to go out in nature and kind of be held and have a deep experience to listen to themselves and to the land. First, when they sign up, they would send a letter of intent. We work with them around what their intention is, what they might be hoping for. Often there's a meeting before we go. It kind of depends on the trip and the guides. And then we are in ceremony for 10, 11 days, where people come. Some people have come who have never even camped before. And they are all prepared by us to know what to bring. They get settled in. We help them establish our base camp. We have a kitchen. People are camping. And we're together for, 3 days? About 3 days
of preparation.
Of circle and councils and preparation and teachings and going deeper and sending people out on little excursions out into the land alone and coming back, getting used to where they are. And then when they're all ready to go, we have a ceremony the night before. And at sunrise the next morning, we have a ceremonial circle where they're sent out alone on their solo. They're out in our programs typically for 4 days and four nights alone, although people can come back if needed. And then they come back on the fifth morning. They're welcomed back in ceremony. They're welcomed back to a lot of delicious food. And then we spend another couple of days hearing the stories, the deep witnessing of the stories, and talking about how to incorporate this when you go back home. That would be the first run I would take at the shape of it.
And where would this occur? What are some of the places?
There are different places. Some of the programs that we've offered through Earthways happen quite locally or within a few hours. I will be guiding a Vision Fast program starting next week with my co-guide, Roy Reamer, out in the Mojave National Preserve. And that is probably about 10 to 12 hours away, which includes a four-wheel drive excursion for the last half mile of it into our base camp.
We've gone to Bohemia, locally. We've gone to the Yolaboli.
We've gone to Lassen. We've gone down to the Indians, down in the Los Padres National Forest.
So with somebody, you mentioned that there are some people who have never even camped before. What do you observe with somebody who has maybe been urban their entire lives? And one of the things that interests me about what you're doing is that we now have a world population that is over 50% are now living in cities, who don't have any daily contact really with anything other than the trees that are planted, if they're lucky. So what happens with these people? Because this is increasingly going to be the situation for us humans. People who have no familiarity, scared of bugs, scared of everything out there.
Scared to sleep out.
So what happens with them? what have you observed?
Oh, the full range of things.
Yeah.
You know, ultimately, I think they do better than we imagine that they'll do.
That's,
that's ultimately what happens.
They blow my mind.
They discover places in themselves that are ancient and true to each of us. They find that they can actually create a home in a place that they thought was really scary. They find that nature can be friendly.
Yeah. When you say a home, having done Vision Quest myself, could you describe the home?
The home.
Well, there's the base camp itself, which is inside of our community, you know, for the preparation and the integration phase. So we're just camping together, and they get a lot of help if they need with gear. I've helped many people, especially elder women, with setting up their tents or going through their gear or fitting their backpack to their bodies or figuring out, okay, you're going to need this, you're not going to need this.
And sometimes our young assistants even help somebody carry their backpack out to their solo spot. We don't let that get in the way of going out.
Is there still a slight bit of shame connected with having a tent? I remember when I did my vision classes, like, well, if you're really hardy, if you really are going to go for it, you don't need a tent.
In base camp, we always have a tent because people like their privacy because we're camping together and it's getting ready. You know, I think now it might be because I mainly guide women, and you could speak to this for the co-ed differently. I feel like women don't need to be tough. Like, if somebody really, really needs to take their tent, they need to take their tent. If they need to eat, we work with them about that. Like, what small amounts could you eat? Because they're already in such a deep ceremony. They don't have to prove anything.
Yeah.
It's almost like if it's too hard, the soul can just close up.
Yeah.
It's how do you make it challenging enough that people feel pushed beyond their normal comfort zone, and yet held enough that people can also relax and open to what wants to come. So the tent issue, mostly women don't take out their tents. Mostly given the options, people seem to feel like they want to push it a little bit.
Yeah.
Well, and I think this is part of the value of those 3 days of preparation at base camp. I've had many people come on programs, women who are terrified, and, you know, I appreciate you bringing up the gender difference, because a lot of times the men, either they're not, they don't say that they're terrified.
No,
or they're either naturally tough.
Especially if there's women around, then we really can't.
Then the co-ed, they're definitely not taking their tent out. They'd rather be shaking in their shoes out there. But a lot of the times, people who are signing up, who are, you know, vocally scared, and we say, well, if you really need to, you could take your tent out, or if you really need to, you could take your chair out, or you could take your, you know, your little stove to make some tea while you're out there during your fast, that kind of thing. Once they get present to the landscape, they start relaxing over those few days. When they take little excursions or walks and they get familiar with the flora and the fauna, they find that actually the snakes are not behind every bush. And actually they are not, you know, there are not that many big scary animals around. And actually there are so many things in the environment that are inviting them to open, and they are starting to relax without all the pressures of the modern world. A lot of the times when it comes time for them to go out, they say, well, you know, I guess I'll be okay without my tent. But if I need to, I can come back to base camp and get it, right?
Yeah.
And they usually don't. They usually find that they can, that there's a friendliness in the environment that they can settle into.
Yeah, so what I'm hearing is that ceremony itself is what distinguishes this from just going backpacking or just camping out or being with friends in the wilderness or whatever. So since that's a really critical place, let's just talk a little bit about ceremony and its and how that's related to helping people to connect in this way.
Well, we kind of, we should both speak to this because this is the most important element.
Yeah, let's spend a lot of time with this.
You know, when they, we say to people that the ceremony begins really when they sign up,
mm-hmm.
when they first begin to get to make the commitment and they're starting to write their letter of intent, this, their ceremony has begun. So we encourage people to start their journals or start watching their dreams, and
mm-hmm.
because it will start to move, and that this is an ancient way that people across time and cultures have always gone out in nature in search of guidance, in search of truth, in search of connection and deep relationship mm-hmm. to the land and to themselves and to the way, to the path, to the lineage. So many of us are pretty disconnected from that. So we really speak a lot about that. We talk about the nature of ceremony. We talk about the severing from your old world, and that we're preparing to go into across a threshold into another way. And we teach those stages of ceremony that are pretty universal.
So that's a form of initiation then, in a way.
I mean, yes.
To go over the threshold.
Yes.
And
it's to die to your old life,
mm-hmm.
and to come out again into your new life, whatever that's going to be. And we teach some things that are called like self-generated ceremony, where we might give suggestions of ceremonies they might do while they're out, but we also teach people that we all know how to make ceremonies on our own. When we're unobserved and open, we know what to do to mark something.
Mm-hmm.
So we give some examples, we might give some suggestions for something somebody might do as we hear their intention, because really the biggest piece of work we do before they go out is around their intention. We do a process called mirroring for intent, where we work with each person for half hour up to an hour about really in the group,
mm-hmm.
clarifying their intention. So everyone really is privy to that deep work of each other, which deepens the intimacy and the holding of the group.
Mm-hmm.
They're really on each other's sides. They really know why everyone's going out.
Mm-hmm.
And then by doing some of the ceremonies, like stepping over the threshold, being smudged out, these are ancient rituals that just open people. They often cry at the threshold circle.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Don't even know why. Mm-hmm. Just moved.
Yeah.
And then when they welcome back, it's still the ceremony. The mm-hmm. ceremony, the sacred ceremony of their story.
Uh-huh.
And what's true for them.
So it sounds like there's an establishment of circle and council that gives the signal over three day period or so, or even before that, really, when they sign up, as you're saying, that this is a container that can hold whatever experience you're going
to
have.
That's
here.
That's a great way to say it.
Mm-hmm.
Perfect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
This can hold anything.
Mm-hmm.
We say that even to ourselves as guides sometimes, trust the ceremony.
Mm-hmm.
This ceremony can hold.
Mm-hmm.
And the ceremony does. It holds everything.
Mm-hmm.
And that's,
so hold us too.
And that's part of the importance of it, you know, and I think the value of initiation rites of passage
mm-hmm.
is that we are, and to, you know, a serenade, this is a pan-cultural practice. We are not doing a Native American ceremony. We acknowledge that people come from all different bloodlines, and
mm-hmm.
people come from all different traditions,
mm-hmm.
and all different religious and spiritual backgrounds, including us guides.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, our goal is not to impose a tradition or a system, but to offer a really simple, bare-bones structure of
mm-hmm.
a ceremony that can be wide enough and spacious enough to hold each person where they're at.
Mm-hmm.
So we invite a very deep personal inquiry for each person around where they're at in their development, their life cycle. As Sarah said, what needs to die so that something else deeper can be born into
mm-hmm.
this life.
Mm-hmm.
Really, what we're offering and what we're wanting to invite is people's very deep inquiry within around what it is that they are stepping into in themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And we want it to feel risky for them. We want it to feel scary, aside from all of the
mm-hmm.
fear of the weather and hunger and loneliness during those 4 days.
Mm-hmm.
You know, ultimately, the biggest fear is inside.
Mm-hmm.
Who am I really if I let go of all of these identities I've been carrying
mm-hmm.
that have gotten too small?
I'm sure you have lots of these stories, but can you think of one story that was dramatic in a way, or where you really saw a transformation happening before your eyes? Somebody who, because you mentioned earlier, you mentioned earlier that some people come, you know, with no clue about how they should even be. They just feel drawn some way, and then something changes. So what would be that? What would be the kind of changes that you see in people once they see this secure place that they can have this experience in?
Well, one woman that popped to mind, you know, without saying names, is we were up in the Yola Bowl, and the woman had very long hair and a very sad story. Very intense, sad story. And she talked about her long, sad hair. Hmm. And her father had loved her hair.
Mm-hmm.
And she went out quite burdened. You know, we watched her go with her big pack. And when we saw her coming back... 4 days later, it was amazing. She had cut her hair.
Oh, wow.
She was so much lighter. The photographs of... We had our assistant take some photographs of people being smudged. Her face is just beautiful, illuminated up to the sky.
Uh-huh.
And she let go of something so enormous. She started doing a lot of Earthways programs after that. Several people have done a lot of programs repeatedly. But that's one that comes to mind. Mm-hmm. She came back... least 100 pounds psychically lighter, but it was symbolized by cutting off her hair.
Uh-huh. And had she ever been in the wilderness before? Was she?
She had been.
She had been.
But I'm also thinking of another woman on that trip who had never camped.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and she burst into tears the first circle and said, "I am really out of my league. I'm here with all you woodsy women, and I don't know what I'm doing." And it touched my heart because I didn't start doing anything in the wilderness till my 30s. I know what terror was and anxiety was. And everybody just rallied and supported her and helped her. And she's gone on several fasts now. She does everything with Earth as she possibly can. She never camps in between. But she comes with her car loaded with all of her gear and she just goes out there and melts. And she has just gotten... so much more open and less critical and less self-critical. She had a lot of self-hatred.
Right.
And that has really melted. And at the end of her fast, the women made a wreath for her hair and dubbed her now a woodsy woman. But she found she could do it.
Yeah, she had the support and the group helped to rally her.
Totally.
So I think it's important maybe at this point to talk a little bit about council and how the council process works.
I just want to say one more thing about the ceremony that I think is really important here. And Sarah's examples are I remember them so fondly, those two women. And, you know, they really represent part of what happens for everybody who goes out, you know, who come back so much lighter. But really, the ceremony is not, you know, we hold the structure, but it is, as is true in all earth-based initiation rites throughout time, it's nature, the spirit of nature that does the initiating. It's this big, wide, vast, ancient, powerful, mysterious life force that people come into contact with, which we don't really have the opportunity to do in our houses and our offices and our technology and all of that. And so, you know, when we open to that...
the intimacy of that.
Right.
And the intimacy of that.
So the ceremony establishes that possibility because we're going to move into non-ordinary... something
non-ordinary
that's non-ordinary and unfamiliar, and you have the support of the group to do that.
And so we get a radical perspective adjustment when we have that much time that we're immersed in this wide open space that really takes us beyond so many of our concepts of how we thought things were strung together in our lives.
So people come back not only with stories from the inside, but incredible stories of what they observed and experienced in the intimacy of the natural world. Experience with birds and trees and everything. They just come back amazed and...
And the beauty, I think, you know, of the fasting, and even though, as Sarah said, we don't enforce that everybody has to go without food, you know, we work with people at their edge. However, emptiness, the going out empty and becoming progressively more empty over those days is a really important part of the ceremony, because mm-hmm. we slow way, way down and we become really porous mm-hmm. to the natural world in a way that normally we just don't. Mm-hmm. Even if we love nature, we get very busy in our lives. And so, you know, to be able to absorb and to witness the movements of the animals and mm-hmm. the way that the plants grow, and to get how mm-hmm. life endures yeah. and changes, and the way that the intelligence in life operates in this very ancient way, we can see some of ourselves mm-hmm. in that. We look in the mirror of what we see out there in the wild mm-hmm. places, and we recognize something about ourselves. Mm-hmm. So we come back with this much deeper awareness mm-hmm. that we are part of something mm-hmm. much bigger
right.
than what we ever thought.
And you mentioned mirroring, and that's where the council process takes its form in that. So say something about that.
Council practice is also ancient. Many peoples have used it through time and culture, the practice of sitting in a circle of deep listening and deep sharing without interrupting, where people actually take a talking piece, whatever that is, and have the space to either be silent or to move or to sing or to speak with people listening attentively. And that doesn't sound so unusual, except when you see how much, when you're in different kind of meetings, you see how much people talk over each other. Mm-hmm. So it allows a spaciousness, and it allows kind of the third body to come in. There's a whole nother spirit that can come in to a really good working council that can keep informing the whole council. Mm-hmm. So everyone's being affected by who's speaking, mm-hmm. how the speaking's happening, by the quality of the listening.
So here are these people who have been out for 4 days or so, and they're coming back with various events that have happened, and here's the group, and here's the opportunity. So what happens then at that point?
After a delicious breakfast.
That's important.
After a delicious breakfast, we let them kind of hang out for a while, uh-huh. keep eating for hours. There's often great humor at uh-huh. that time, a lot yeah. of joking. That's the other thing, the sacred and the profane, I'm going to say.
Okay.
We're talking as if it's yeah. so serious, but there's also tremendous
playfulness
uh-huh. and humor uh-huh. and profanity that can come in.
Yeah, uh-huh. It's just so important.
All
it's so
ends
important.
Of the spectrum, the uh-huh. coyote aspects. Uh-huh. But when they come back, when we go into story council, when it's time to tell their story, they get a certain amount of time. We really hold their story respectfully, and we mirror back to them actively when they're done speaking their story.
And what's the size of the group usually, the average size?
Anywhere from 4 to 12.
And so over a two-day period, 4 to 12 people have an opportunity to expand into their story and be seen by the group.
Yeah, be witnessed.
However they are,
yeah.
be witnessed. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
We hold this part of the ceremony as a really important aspect of any rite of passage is the, mm-hmm. you know, Sarah was naming earlier, there was the severance phase of, you know, the decision to listen to the call and to come. Mm-hmm. There's the threshold phase of going out during that sacred time, sacred space. And then the third phase is the incorporation phase, where we really take into the body what was experienced mm-hmm. up on the mountaintop, per se. Mm-hmm. And so the eating of the food and coming back is the first part of that, mm-hmm. but the giving of the story is the second most important part of that mm-hmm. incorporation that, mm-hmm. you know, we consider it a giveaway. It's the first opportunity to give away to your people something really important that you got out there during that time. Uh-huh. There's wisdom there. There's
and
healing. There's knowledge.
Uh-huh.
You know, not everybody has an opportunity to have that kind of experience. And we consider that so, so valuable for our people. So it's a lot of the times people come back, they think, I don't really have a story. I just sat around
yeah,
for
I
4 days.
Think that.
I don't know.
I don't
Nobody's going to want to hear me tell my story.
Nothing
you know?
Much happened.
You know?
Yeah.
But it's not, and we like to really encourage people that actually once you start speaking, you know, there's going to be so much more that's going to come forth you don't even realize.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's an important part of it. We invite the treasure of what's about to unfold, and then we are all profoundly, profoundly moved by it. Mm-hmm. And the mirroring that the guides offer as part of the elders' circle is our give back, our offering back of how we see what happened for them. And part of what we want to convey around how we were moved by their story mm-hmm. is to reflect for them how their personal, very, very personal, unique story is connected to a much, much, much larger story.
Mm-hmm.
A much larger story, and that it's an important offering. Who they are mm-hmm. and what they experienced out there is actually part of a large story and is food for their people.
Mm-hmm.
It is their gift in their return back to their community.
Right, because we don't do this just for ourselves. We do this to take back to our community a bigger person, a larger person.
Right,
who
yeah.
Gives
and I was going to ask that question because...
It's not just another psychological like experiment.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. The incorporation of those experiences or visions, whatever happens to happen out there, how is that supported when they come back? Are there ways that, I mean, because when they come back to the community, I mean, they've had a profound experience. For some people, it may be life-changing, but the trick is, how do I validate that and live my life from this
mm-hmm,
place now?
Right.
So
that's the hardest part.
This is the hardest part.
Yeah.
That is,
yeah. We've been experimenting a little bit. Like the last couple mm-hmm. of years, we've actually had incorporation council like 6 months after
mm-hmm.
where people come back together and talk about how it's been. Sometimes we send a letter, you know, or sometimes we encourage some email reports, you know, like council by email.
Uh-huh.
Like, here's what's happening for me. Sometimes people go and we don't see them again.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's a kind of a wide variety. I think in the general field of rites of passage right now, it's starting to be addressed that more and more need is, there's more and more need now for concrete incorporation, for follow-through
uh-huh.
in communities.
Right.
And one of the things I was going to say that Earthways, we only usually offer one or two vision quests a year, one woman and one co-ed.
Mm-hmm.
All of our other programs, often people sign up for because those are related to incorporation.
Uh-huh.
They might be a day walk on the land
uh-huh.
where we do the same steps, just way reduced.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a way for them to remember
right.
and to get back mm-hmm. outdoors or to explore a topic through this lens. So some people will continue to sign up for different things from time to time
mm-hmm.
as a remembrance and a support.
Right.
Yeah.
So I can see that if the more that there could be a group that people
yeah.
can return to, or at least one other person that's had somewhat
yeah.
of a similar experience, that they can
yeah.
Touch in with that and be reminded.
Uh-huh. And I think that's what's happened with School of Lost Borders. You know, for all of us, I jokingly call School of Lost Borders our mothership.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Stephen Foster and Meredith Little really brought modern rites of passage to our culture for the modern day psychological mind
mm-hmm.
35 years ago and offered a huge gift. And when people come in fast, they come from all over the world, all over the country, so they just go.
Uh-huh.
But bit by bit, it's been like seeds blown everywhere, and now there are
yeah.
guides everywhere and programs a lot of places. And that felt like that's what felt important to us about just having Earthways right in Sebastopol where
mm-hmm.
people can, and there's other programs around
right.
so that people can continue to find people who know what they went through.
I've really noticed just even in the last 10 years, it just seems like the diaspora, the seeds have sprouted everywhere.
Yeah.
There are many,
mm-hmm.
many people who are becoming aware of this kind of work or doing more earth-based
yeah.
work, not just
mm-hmm.
the, you know, summer camps for kids and things like that,
mm-hmm.
but this kind of more ceremonial way upon the land. And I'm noticing that more and more communities are forming, you know, people are forming their either informal collectives
mm-hmm.
or their organizations. There's just a lot more awareness
mm-hmm.
around earth-based kinds of practices that
yeah.
people are
seeing. And both of you are therapists, both of you are healers, and what I'm hearing is that your work as healers has been transformed by this experience. You no longer see healing and psychology in the same way. And that's what Stephen Foster was addressing as well. Mm-hmm. So let's talk a little bit about that and how that's...
It had a dramatic effect on my practice. I realized that, you know, I went to John F. Kennedy University in Orinda in 1980, and it was the first program in transpersonal psychology. And it was so exciting. They were talking about spirit and the body and things that had never been in the psychological world. But years later, Cynthia and I were invited back to JFK to give a talk in eco-psychology, and I realized that we had never talked about the earth. So it's like, now that's part of psychology programs. So for me in my practice, I started asking people more. You know, like you become aware as a therapist of what you're not looking at, too. Like I never, once I became more somatically oriented, I realized I had never looked at the body before. And now I was starting to give people sometimes assignments to go out in nature. Sometimes I was actually taking my clients out into nature myself. Sometimes I was asking them where their places were. I was hearing those stories. Plus, I was also beginning to teach, as it arose, the circular wheel of nature, which is so much so much less pathologizing than a linear model. So I think it affected my practice a lot.
Right.
In a really good way.
Yeah, for me too. I mean, I went to the California Institute of Integral Studies in the early 90s for graduate school. So I came into the psychotherapy field already pretty out of the box. However, when I started with School of Lost Borders and training and started guiding for Earthways, I'd say a big part of how it influenced my psychotherapist identity and way of being in the room with people was that I let myself get bigger as a presence. I invited myself to bring more of my passion into the room, more of my intensity, more of my depth, more of my humor, more of my full self. And
that's true.
Found it much more engaging for me to work with people, and found that a lot of people really appreciated that I was really not anywhere near a blank screen therapist, and I think people appreciated the presence of that. But I also, you know, I've had many clients come out on the land on programs with me. I continue to. I enjoy that weaving back and forth where it's right. And I do also, and this is not on the website yet for Earthways, but I do take clients of mine out on the land every couple months. I do some individual work that's based on this same model, you know, where we meet in the morning. They go out on the land alone for 4.5 hours, and then they come back for another half hour of integration and mirroring. And mostly, they are my clients who do that. So we weave it back and forth. I have a number of clients in my psychotherapy practice who have done vision fast work and who have been involved in these kind of ceremonial practices. And so I really enjoy being able to support their incorporation process in
really
a regular way.
The work.
It really,
you know, Cynthia, when you said about how much it changed you, I realized that when you're a guide sitting, you know, you've been camping with people for 10 days, you all let your hair down a lot. You know, you might be with clients for a day on the land where you've just got your camping clothes on. A couple of people who were my clients would come on these things with me, and they would say things to me like, "I never knew you were so funny." Like, I realized that there was that looseness I felt being out on the land where we could hold all of it. That I would be more outrageous. I would be more, and that was a real gift to me too. It's like the old persona had gotten way too small.
It sounds like it breaks down the taboos about dual relationships pretty fast.
It does.
And
really,
when it's appropriate,
it
it's really helpful. It really deepens the work.
And people do self-select. I think the people who are not going to really want to do that dual relationship thing for whatever reason. Whatever reason. They're not going to say yes to going out on the pro. They know. They know it doesn't
ready
feel right.
For something like that.
I have a client who just recently, and she comes out with me for the individual work sometimes. She said, "You know, when I see you out on the land, you just seem a lot happier."
And and isn't that what every client wants, is more happiness in their lives and to be mirrored that way? And imagine being, if I imagine myself being one of Freud's clients. And I'm looking for happiness, and he's back there in his chair, and I don't even see him. I get on cocaine
with his jaw cancer. Right.
Yeah. So to see that, the kind of vitality that comes forth in the natural setting, and what I hear you saying, Cynthia, is that you, even if you're in an office with this person, you're bringing that to the situation. If you can't be out, well, at least you can be speaking from the place that you would be speaking if you were sitting at the base of a tree,
right? Yeah,
hanging out exactly. Rather than, you know, some kind of formal relationship with somebody. Yeah.
And then the programs that we do that are day longs, there might even be a theme for a program. Like, for instance, one woman and I did a day long program on near Mother's Day a year ago for women who had never had children. Mm-hmm. And we did it out of Ocean Song, but it includes like a 3-hour solo out on the land. These things always include time in nature. So we might even be exploring a topic, but it's always counsel. There's always circle and counsel. Mm-hmm. There's always being smudged out onto the land and welcome back. There's always time for your story to be heard, even if it tends to be around a particular theme. Mm-hmm. So we have some of those sometimes too, as the guides feel moved to offer from our own lives.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then I know School of Lost Borders has programs, I don't know if you do or not, but around the dying process itself. Mm-hmm. I don't know if either of you are involved in that, but that's something that seemed to be central to Stephen's work.
Yes, they have that program, the department in the school called Living and Dying, that are programs about reconciliation, forgiveness. Often I took one called Walking into the Good Night, which was about literally preparing for death. We haven't offered anything like that specifically. Oh, no.
Well, Roy and I did. My guiding partner, Roy Reamer, who is, he works as the director of the volunteer program at Zen Hospice Program in San Francisco. His world is very much oriented around the dying as a rite of passage. And there was a period of time for a couple of years where we were really focusing our work in that way. So we did a couple of year-long series through the seasons of working with the medicine wheel teachings that we use, the four shields, looking at living and dying through the seasons and culminating in either a full vision fast or a week-long program that's really oriented in that way. So, really taking the ceremony and inviting people to consider it much more deeply as a dying practice and to look more closely at the fact that even if we don't seem to be dying right now, our days are numbered. And so we can use this work as dying practice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd say that the awareness of dying is pretty core to this ceremony, actually. And like, we just finished a program for women who had just come through serious illness. And like, I've learned to frame serious illness, surgery, almost anything in my life as a ceremony with these steps. You know, it helps hold life.
What are the four shields? You've mentioned that. And
so the four shields, you know, really across cultures and time, all earth-based cultures have their mandalas and their wheels. It is, you know, they all have different directions, different colors, different seasons, different animals, different attributes. They all vary all around the world. Even Carl Jung did a study around mandalas and talked about how, you know, in his work with schizophrenics, people who started getting well began to spontaneously draw mandalas. So it's considered a symbol of wholeness, and it can be an orienting symbol, a way to see ourselves. This wheel that we use in Earthways, the four shields, we learned in our training through the School of Lost Borders. Stephen and Meredith received the wheel from Jaime Storm, who received it through a number of different Native American elders, which came through the Cheyenne and ultimately the Mayan, ancient, much larger wheel called the 20 count, which is a very large cosmic wheel. This wheel that we use, the four shields of human nature, is one wheel of that much, much, much larger mandala that includes everything. So it is some of how we can hold it is an earth-based psychology, mm-hmm. that it is includes all the seasons, it includes all of the stages of our development from birth, early childhood, adolescence, mm-hmm. full initiated adulthood, elderhood, and dying.
Mm-hmm.
We can look at it through the lens of the body, the soul, the mm-hmm. mind, and the spirit.
Mm-hmm.
We can look at different challenges and strengths that come through each side of the wheel. We use it in our guiding as an assessment tool for people who are mm-hmm. here to see where are they strong, where are they undernourished,
mm-hmm.
and how might the ceremony support them in helping to strengthen mm-hmm. aspects that mm-hmm. have been undernourished in accordance to this wheel. It is a way for people to feel reflected in the larger seasons and cycles mm-hmm. of nature.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's large, and you know the idea is that we can keep going around the wheel over and over and over again, and ultimately we want to get round,
mm-hmm.
and ultimately we want to just keep getting bigger so we can continue to nourish all these different
aspects. And it's so, what I love about teaching it to people is people just intuitively get it.
Mm-hmm.
They love it. Because it's so different than that linear thing that you're supposed to be getting. You know, that thing where you say, like, how many times do I have to go through this issue?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's sort of the linear model. As right. if you get through something, you're going to mm-hmm. be done with it. Whereas this is like every time we go around in our own development, we go deeper and wider.
Mm-hmm.
And so people really like it. It's so non-pathologizing.
Mm-hmm.
And because it's the mirror of the natural world with our own inner world.
Yeah, and it's a map that isn't about specialized terminology. It's about the things that we all touch and feel mm-hmm. and notice
exactly.
all mm-hmm. the time. Mm-hmm. But it's an expansion of the map, the cognitive map that most of us have that's given to us through modern psychology.
I think that's mm-hmm. what people get it so quickly, because mm-hmm. it is based on this, mm-hmm. what we can see and mm-hmm. feel and know.
Mm-hmm.
We know winter. We know fall. We know spring. We know the dawn.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
It's a wonderful thing to teach outside also, mm-hmm. because we have a wheel, you know, through stones, usually simple wheel in the center of our altar that we're all sitting around on the land. And mm-hmm. so we can point to the different colors, the stones, where they're oriented in the different directions.
Uh-huh.
We can teach about the seasons, what happens during that season, and we can recognize that in our own body, our own psyche,
uh-huh.
our own
yeah.
mind.
And then we might send people out for like an hour with a question about that
uh-huh.
aspect
uh-huh.
to come back. And
uh-huh.
yeah.
One thing that's also really great about the wheel, you were saying how it's non-pathologizing. It is non-pathologizing, and there's room for the shadow and difficulty mm-hmm. and challenge.
Mm-hmm.
So the West Shield, which holds all of the, you know, the painful, dark underworld journey, there's a whole fourth of the wheel is devoted to that.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's room for us to struggle
mm-hmm.
and
yeah,
wrestle.
Without it being a failure.
Without it being mm-hmm. a failure, which our culture doesn't make room for that at
mm-hmm.
all. You know,
mm-hmm.
what our culture will do with all of that is just want to medicate it
mm-hmm.
and have us put a Band-Aid on it and go back to work the next morning.
Yeah.
So we make room for that, but also encourage, and there are ceremonies that we might invite to help people go deeper into it, mine it, and then
mm-hmm.
come through the other side
right.
as a necessary part of that passage into our fullness as adults who can
mm-hmm.
really give something of value to mm-hmm. our culture.
And this is really Stephen and Meredith's brilliance,
mm-hmm.
was bringing this model to us for our time.
Right. And
they really got it with taking thousands of people out. They just saw so much of this and just kept studying it and listening, and
mm-hmm.
that was really huge gift.
Yeah, offering to people who are healers already a different model. And it sounds like both of you have been transformed, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Your, how you view healing, how you view your work with people is not the same as it was
mm-hmm.
15 years ago, right? I mean,
no. True. And even where I am in my own life, it might be like, oh, I am really out of balance there right now.
Mm-hmm.
Too much of this. So what do I already know what I could do to strengthen something that's weaker
mm-hmm.
because of this. It's a way I see now.
Mm-hmm.
And that can be a very North Shield aspect, a very North Shield capacity to be able to oversee all of the different quadrants of the wheel inside of ourselves and be able to see, you know what? I need to get out and play.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I haven't laughed.
And make some art.
I need to go have fun.
I know. And that is brings me to a question that it's on my mind a lot, given that we have so many children now who are spending 2 years old, they're already on screens. Mm. They're being really reinforced to be inside at some spot where, or at least to have their screen with them at all times. So what would you offer to this situation that we're finding ourselves now in our culture, where so few people, actually even the children, I heard the other day on the radio, people have to encourage people to feel that it's good to have your child go outside. They're making public service announcements. Wow. Let your child go out and play this summer, all right? I mean...
Well, how I would respond to that? That seems like such a huge problem. The only way I can make a contribution to that is I'm thrilled when mothers come on the program, or grandmothers come, or grandfathers, because it's like when they have the experience, that's all I can do, is promote their direct experience.
Mm-hmm.
And then they start talking about it, like, wow.
Yeah.
And that's the only effect I can have.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You
know? That's true. For me too, since I don't work with children right now, I have a client who, you know, if she's really struggling, I pretty much always tell her to go outside. I tell her she should go for a walk. Mm-hmm. And she loves to go to the beach, and it's a big struggle for her to get out there. But more and more now she tries to take the kids, and they all do a lot better. They all do a lot better when she can take them all out and spend some time out in nature. And I think that that's one of the values of working with adults, is that they can influence the children, because they do influence the children.
Mm-hmm. One of our colleagues named Trebby Johnson lives in Pennsylvania, and she's been very creative with how to get these kind of small snippets into, like, she would do little day walks in Central Park in Manhattan.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she will do anything anywhere, like just in a park or a little church courtyard.
Uh-huh.
And one time, my masseuse, actually, years ago, was dying of cancer, and they lived in a little house in Camp Meeker, and I went up, and they asked me to come do something with them.
Uh-huh.
And I actually put them out in their backyard. We did a circle, and my masseuse couldn't do much. She just sat and looked at the roses, and her partner went for a walk.
Mm-hmm.
But they had a little immersion right in their yard. And that was so humbling to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, oh, it's so little is actually needed if there's intention and holding.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just go out and look at the rose bushes. So I sometimes have given people, like, little lists of, like, if you forget, things you can do.
Uh-huh.
You know, go out and do this, or go look at, you know, when was the last time you saw the dawn, or... And that's part of the individual suggestions we can kind of give in therapy.
Mm-hmm. And we often do need to give individual suggestions, but really, you know, what people need and miss most in this day and time is unstructured time in nature.
Mm-hmm.
Unstructured time, you know, so a lot of these suggestions are so simple enough that people feel like they have an assignment, something to do, because we like to feel like we're doing something these days.
Mm-hmm.
But ultimately, it's about going out and being and seeing what happens.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and following your own whims.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's in our culture, everything is all structured. The digital age is all very, even though things break down all the time, things are, you kind of anticipate things to go in a particular way. But when you're out in nature, anything could happen. Anything could show up in whatever way. And that's part of the healing of it. We take in this wildness that has its own order to it.
Yeah, think about our 200,000-year evolution as Homo sapiens. The vast majority of that time was spent outside.
Yes.
I mean, it's only the last, 10,000 years that a lot of us have come inside. You know, So you're bringing back something that is so fundamental that we've forgotten it.
Right in front of our face.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So what's your vision for Earthways? As it is, are you where you want to be with it, and are you offering the programs you want to offer, or how do you?
I think you know, the programs we offer change from year to year depending on the whims of the guides.
Mm-hmm.
We have 10 now, will be 11 in August. So it'll be 11
guides, 11.
Yes. Many people are also working for a living, so this is something they do on top of that. So
yeah,
that limits a little bit of what we can offer sometimes. But I think mostly we love what we do. I think mostly we would like to have more people know what we do.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. That's always the thing, is how do people know about us? We don't have a big presence in the
uh-huh.
Sonoma County, in the
Bay
Area.
But you have a website.
We have a website.
What's the?
Earthways, LLC, all lowercase,
okay.
.com.
Mm-hmm.
And that has our programs on it and our bios and our
right.
mission.
And if people want to find out more about School of Lost Borders, they can just
go online
for that. That's
schoolofLostBorders.org.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. So that's an easy one to find. There's also WildernessGuidesCouncil.org, where people from all over the country can see who are the guides who have been trained, who are doing all kinds of programs all over the country, Canada,
mm-hmm.
and even internationally.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Europe, South Africa.
Mm-hmm.
So that's also a very good resource. Sometimes people call us and they're saying, I'm in so-and-so, you know, where
mm-hmm.
do you know anybody? And we send them to that. I send them to that website.
Uh-huh.
That's our community of guides,
uh-huh.
you know, who are all trained. So it's wonderful. We just love it.
We do love it.
I'd love to do it more. And
yeah.
sometimes just the marketing gets kind of
challenging.
Yeah. Marketing is challenging, especially when we all have big lives and
uh-huh.
big full jobs, and we're not necessarily oriented in that marketing.
Well, and
kind
that
of
even
way.
Brings up another question. Like, if you market, then are you making this another feel good thing? You know, like,
sure.
Well, do you want to be happier? Well, you're not necessarily. That's not the point.
Right.
You know?
It's about connection.
It's
about
connection.
About connection.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So, in some ways,
mm-hmm.
people kind of find us when it's the time to find us,
mm-hmm.
too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
You ask great questions. Thank you so much.
Mm. Yeah, well, I think that's probably a good place to bring it to a close, and I've really appreciated hearing the liveliness and of your involvement with this work. It's beautiful.
We love it.
We do. Thank you for giving us the opportunity to share about it.
All right.